Hi, my name is Maya Rudolph, and I feel pretty terrific about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to... That was terrible. Let's try it again.
I'm not going to do that. You just quietly said, not
that sounded like someone woke you from a nightmare.
Oh, let me try it again. Hello and welcome to another episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I really do need a friend. We all need a friend during these times, these very trying times. And so thrilled to be doing the podcast, you know? It nourishes me. Can you tell that, Sona, that the podcast nourishes me?
What?
It nourishes me. I enjoy it. I enjoy the podcast. That's not a hard concept to understand.
It's not. Nourishes is a weird word. I really do see that you enjoy... What do you mean?
It feeds me.
Nourishes. No, that's weird.
I think people say that. Matt, do you think that was so weird that I say the podcast nourishes me?
No, I think it's like you're like a Lestat vampire who feeds on the adoration of other people. So it does make sense to me. Yeah.
Oh, so I was thinking of myself as a as an infant suckling at the teat of podcastery.
Either one isn't a win, but I do agree. Yeah,
that's how I see it. I see it that the podcast is I'm a newborn and I need fresh mother's milk.
Yes,
and I found this medium quite by accident, and I'm sure I don't belong here, but I'm suckling at the teat of podcastery. Yes. I don't think of myself as a wampir. That's vampire, pronounced in the old 19th century sense. I am not a wampir.
Why?
Why what?
Why would anyone need to care
about what?
How they pronounced vampire in the 18th century?
I think they didn't. They Matt, isn't there's a movie, the one where
is it the Francis Ford Coppola?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Wampir.
Gary Oldman over enunciates everything. Why don't you grow a beard?
Why don't you grow a beard? Okay. Oh my God, I love that movie. I tried to get my kids to watch that movie the other night, and I was describing it to them, and they wouldn't watch it.
I love that movie, too.
They don't watch horror. My kids won't watch horror, and I love horror movies. And also, that movie has so many... It has great, truly great moments, and then moments that are, like, so ridiculous, you know, in some of the performances and in some of the imagery. It's insane. But anyway, we've decided, one way or the other, whether you say it nourishes me or it suckles me...
It suckles you?
Yes. Wait, I said that wrong, didn't I?
You did say that.
Well, you know, in a way, can I say something? And this is going to sound a little, maybe just a little self-centered. The medium has suckled at me.
Oh.
Because I think I have nourished podcasts with my contribution. And I know that that's going to enrage the podcast community. They're going to say, hey, man, you just came along like a year and a half ago. What the fuck? And I'm going to go, no. I'm sorry, other podcasts, but you suckle at my teat just as I suckle at yours.
Yeah, and it's been 2 years, so fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you go get bit by a wampir?
Oh, man.
I think it's, too late to introduce you guys now, but of course, Sonam Obsession, my assistant until, well, she moves on.
Yes.
Many hints, but nothing happens. And then, of course, Matt Gourley, a terrific podcast producer. You do a great job. You really
do. Thanks.
Where's the bit?
There's no bit. He really does do a good job. Okay. Yeah.
I have a pitch for us.
Yes.
I think the three of us should go on the sensation that's sweeping America, Floor is Lava. Do you know about this?
No.
It's this huge new game show on Netflix where three people have to go across a room where all the furniture is floating in lava. And you have to use all this kind of like strategy and coordination to work together as a team. And I think we'd all...
Let me ask a couple of questions to understand quickly.
So quickly,
Is it real lava?
It's no, but it's like red colored water. And when the people fall in, they cut away and you never see them again. Like they died.
Wow.
It's about teamwork. We would die.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I think so.
Yeah, I think you would start speaking way too loud, and that would part the lava. The lava would move aside.
It doesn't even make sense.
It'd be a path.
That doesn't even make sense.
Not like Moses, but just because
you're speaking. No. Seriously, you'd be like, now wait a minute. Where do we get a good burrito? And all of the of the lava would part. Well, is this a huge show?
It's huge, yeah.
And you think the three of us should go on it?
Yeah, I think it will be a study in dysfunction.
Would they book us? I mean, obviously, they'd be, Conan O'Brien. That's a
I
catch.
I think that's exactly okay. why. Yeah, they would. They'd
but when I say I'm bringing my two friends from the podcast along, don't I get some pushback? You know, hey, why not Andy Garcia?
That's your first choice. Andy
Garcia. Are you even friends with Andy Garcia?
I'm not, but I'm pretending that I have a posse that's me, Andy Garcia, and
who else?
Larry Storch. Larry Storch. I think he's close to 100 years old, and he played Agarn on F Troop. That's my posse. It's a strange posse, but it's my posse. Do they get celebrities on that show?
They have not yet.
You're pitching him for a show.
So you're pushing
that
me.
Just normal everyday.
I thought they got like the top celebrities in the world, and I was flattered that you thought I could be on it.
What they do is they'll do like the teachers, the tennis friends. We would be the podcasters.
No.
Yes.
No. No, we would not be the podcasters. Lord, I would be Conan O'Brien and then those two people.
What? I'm sorry.
That's what it would be.
We don't even get names? Well, no. Come on.
People, you'd be person one and Gorley would be person two. I'm sorry. That's how it works.
I don't think this is a good idea.
You don't think we should go on this show?
No, because
is there a show we should go on? Is there ever a Bachelor?
What?
I can't go on The Bachelor, can I? Because I'm married.
No, you can't. No, really? And you're. I'm not saying this to be mean. You're too old. I'm not saying that to be mean. You are too
old. Wait a minute. You had a perfect out, which is Conan. You've been married for almost 20 years. You can't be on The Bachelor. And you didn't go with that? How am I too old to be on The Bachelor?
They're all in their 20s and 30s.
So what? I look. People have no idea how old I am. I'm a very youthful person.
You've been on television 30? For as long as some of those contestants have been alive.
I got started very young, and I've had a lot of work done.
Okay.
I'm telling you, if I was a bachelor, so many women would just be losing it and hoping that I... Is it a rose? What do you do?
Yeah, you give a rose.
I don't watch it.
What?
I don't see the show a lot. I just assume
you want to be on a reality show you don't watch.
I don't get...
You just want to be flanked by a lot of women.
I think a lot of very young women who are like fitness instructors would be saying, I got to spend time in the hot tub with Conan, but then Kirstie came along. But there'd be a lot of the episode of The Bachelor where I had to leave to go take cholesterol-lowering medication. I needed a nap, and I wanted to watch the latest Ken Burns documentary.
And there's just 20 roses left on the ground, and that's all you see.
There's just roses everywhere, and all these women are like, who is this guy? And then one of them's like, how old is he again? Jesus, you're kidding. He's that old? Wait, when I was born, he was 40? How is that even possible?
Oh, my God.
And I'd come out every now and then, I'd be like, who wants a shoulder rub?
Oh, God.
I'd be like, no, thank you. I'll give you the rose if you let me smell your hair. Oh.
You never eliminate anyone. You just
I know I would never eliminate
15 contestants.
I would keep all.
You'd say bring a friend.
I would say bring a friend. I would say I'd be completely asexual. Well, ladies, we've had a great couple of months here. You haven't eliminated any of us. Maybe I'll give a rose soon. You haven't given one fucking rose away, you old piece of shit. I'm not as old as you think I am.
They hate you so much.
They hate me so much. They're always just like, I just want off the island.
Oh my God.
If you're lucky, I'll have sex with you. What? They should do a creepy old bachelor.
Well, you've convinced me. Forget Flora's Lava. I want to see this. And I want to see
it. You know what they should do? It's the new show I'm looking at called
Expired
creepy,
Bachelor.
Creepy old bachelor. None of the women want to be with him. I really want to see that show.
I think that's just called every office environment.
Yeah, probably. No.
Well, they never know who the bachelor is until they get there, I think. So.
No, they don't get there. Can you see that? Can you imagine their faces?
Yeah.
If they get all those women and they go like, well, now who hosts the bachelor? Is it
Chris Harrison?
Yeah, I thought it was Stibe Chutley.
Oh, you thought it was, no, Stibe Chutley quit a couple years ago.
Is it Chiz Backman?
No, who is it? Not Chiz Backman.
Is it Chaz Holloway? But anyway, no, the host of The Bachelor, right? Bing Shalimar. Bing Shalimar would say, and here he is, and I come out.
Yeah. It's a franchise that's existed for so long.
And I would kill it,
you
in,
would
one episode.
Kill it in one episode.
And whoever sticks it out gets to have a little bundt cake. That's my big...
That's what they're there for.
You get a bundt cake. Yeah. Well, anyway, we can't mess around. We got a fantastic show today. Fantastic show today. Let me tell you who's on.
Yes.
Oh, right. They already announced who's on. Yeah, it's not a big surprise. I always act like it's a surprise. I fundamentally don't understand how my own podcast works.
I know.
It says when you get the show, who's on the show. Do you know what I mean?
And they've already introduced themselves.
They've already introduced themselves. It's so clear. I don't listen to it. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just having a good time.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited about our guest. Mm-hmm. My guest today is someone who I've wanted to have on the program since the very beginning of this podcast.
Yeah.
She's a hilarious actress and comedian who is a cast member on Saturday Night Live and starred in the hit movie Bridesmaids. She's currently nominated for 3 Emmys. Good God. 3 Emmys just this season alone for her roles on Saturday Night Live, Big Mouth, and The Good Place. I am thrilled and honored she is with us today. Maya Rudolph, welcome. I'm going to start by bragging on your behalf, which is you are currently nominated for 3 Emmys.
Ain't that a bitch? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's I wouldn't say it's a bitch. I don't know what I'd say. Ain't that?
I guess you're supposed to say like, ain't that about a bitch if you're cool. I don't really know if I'm saying it right, but I'm pretty thrilled.
Well, I am cool. And you're supposed to say, ain't that about a bitch? Because that's how I talk. That's what people, Conan.
That's what they know you for.
That's a Conanism. That was my catchphrase in the 90s when I was on Late Night. I'd mm-hmm. open the show by going, ain't that about a bitch? People mm-hmm. went crazy.
People go,
yeah, just crowd would go nuts. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say something. You're nominated for 3 Emmys this year for your roles on Saturday Night Live, Big Mouth, and The Good Place. Check this out. You are the first actor in Emmy history. In Emmy history to be nominated twice in the same guest category in a single year. That's fucking crazy.
That's fucking crazy. I can't believe it's me that they're talking about.
Well, I looked into it. They're not. It's a mistake. It's a clerical. Yeah, it's not you.
It was about Angela Bassett. Listen, I'll take it.
It says right here, Angela Bassett, and they fucked up.
I'll take it, Angela. I'll take it. Because let me tell you something, Conan. I'm not getting a lot of great news these days. I don't know about you, but it's nice to get good news.
Yeah, it is. Well, that I can imagine you getting the call early in the morning. I'm guessing that you're nominated 3 times. And then this historic, you know, twice in the, you're competing against yourself in the same guest category.
I am. There's such a rivalry going on at my house right now between me and me. That'd be great.
That's so great. If you were just sort of bitchy about yourself, like, no, she's okay.
There's some hate campaigns out. There's
that
like,
you're putting out against yourself.
You've seen her on Saturday Night Live, but is she really reading the cue cards?
Well, as long as you hate yourself, my advice to you is put all of your self-esteem into these Emmys. If you win, really love yourself. Mm-hmm. And if for some reason you don't, which I think is statistically difficult, but if you didn't, I think you should just feel terrible.
I should end
yourself.
It all. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't do that. No, I'd stick around, but just be really miserable.
Stick around. You might be right. You make a good point.
I make a really good point. No, I'm very happy for you. I'm always, I want to say, nourished when really talented people are recognized. You've been recognized many times, but it makes me believe in the system. Does that make sense? It kind of makes me feel
like,
no,
that's... It does, and I feel like I'm talking about someone else I know because I feel the same way. Because I think you and I both share the same underdog DNA because of our Saturday Night Live time mm-hmm. that we put in. And so no matter how successful you become or how loved or lauded you are, we were originally plebes working within a system that I mean, I'm being facetious when I say that. I there's nothing I'm more proud of than being at Saturday Night Live, but there's this amazing thing that Lorne did, which was when he created that place, he put in that not ready for primetime players thing that built up this kind of amazing camaraderie with all of us that worked there, both the cast and the writers, that made us these underdogs because we had these movie stars coming in and out every week. And we were the hardworking, scrappy kids that fought really hard to get our shit on the air. And that's where you find all those incredibly talented people that week in and week out you know, put their lifeblood into that place and really are the funniest people that you know, but don't always get the credit. And so I just became really used to that. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of my response every time something gets recognized that it's that's someone that I think is amazingly talented, because it happens rarely.
You know, what's interesting is that there's this feeling that I had at Saturday Night Live, and I think it's what you're describing. It's you know, the institution, the comedic institution, maybe in American history. It's this absolutely incredible place that you go into. But while you're there, it plays on all your insecurities. That's mm-hmm. what happened to me. I never felt like I deserved to be there. Mm-hmm. I would work incredibly hard. And no matter what kind of success I had there, I thought, I'm just the guy that's here to sort of fix the furnace.
That's
you know,
right.
You had tremendous success, but there's something about leaving and then you have done so well as yourself and on your own terms. That, and it's the same thing, you know, Tina Fey, so many people, Amy Poehler, you become those people that would then come back to Saturday Night Live and everyone would be nervous around you. Do you know what I mean? Which is very hard to accept. There's this acceptance that if you're lucky happens later on that you can never feel when you're at Saturday Night Live, because it feels like you're in high school. You can't feel too
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. Like maybe college at best. But yeah, I mean, my office was so messy and shitty. It probably smelled bad because we were in there at, you know, when the cleaning people were supposed to come in, we were in there till 8 o'clock in the morning. So it was disgusting. I mean, I was there for the days that some of those dudes were peeing in cups and leaving them on their shelf. You know, those stories.
I do that during the podcast.
You do that now.
I'm doing it now.
Right, yeah. Right now?
Hold on. There we go. What was the question? I got distracted.
I got distracted too. But yeah, it's you said it so well, because the minute you said these beautiful people would come in your office, my first thought was J-Lo, you know, like her. It was the first time Jennifer Lopez came into the office and we were pitching her something. And I thought, God, I'm really not. That's a real person. That person's skin looks that good in real life. And this was before people were surgically augmenting their posteriors. Hers is real. And it was in my office and it was beautiful.
Right.
So
right.
Beautiful.
Did you look at it a lot? Did you look at it? Were you just staring at it like it was the second coming of Christ?
I was. I honestly was. It was really beautiful.
Yeah. I hear it can heal the sick.
Like, and you will often. Walk again. If there's
little boy in a wheelchair is brought to J-Lo's ass and he just looks at it and then he's tap dancing and J-Lo's like, come on.
That's the first step, is after the wheelchair he's tap dancing.
He goes right to tap dancing and he's not good. He's not a good tap dancer, but he's just so excited to be walking because of J-Lo's ass.
Oh my God.
But it's fascinating.
It's so true. What you said is exactly true. Not the tap dancing part, but the high school, the imposter syndrome.
Yes.
The like, I do believe that it's there for a reason, whether mm-hmm. it was intended initially or not. But it does breed, you know, something where we work harder, that much harder. I mean, when I worked there, I didn't have a family and I lived alone and, you know, I lived like a vampire. Like there was nothing in my refrigerator and I don't know when anything had been cleaned. And I was rarely home because everything I did was for that place. And that's all that mattered at that time. But it made me a really dedicated, hard worker.
You, I think like a lot of us thought, could I work there at Saturday Night Live? That was a dream of yours. You were a huge fan of Gilda Radner's. And I'm wondering, why did you gravitate? I mean, I think the answer is obvious, and this isn't me being, many people gravitated to her, but what was it specifically about Gilda Radner for you?
It's so funny because, you know, when you're a kid and you like something like that, you don't know why, and you think, huh, that was odd that I like that. And then you meet all your people and you find out later that Tina loved her and Amy loved her and, you know, everybody had the same feelings. But for me, it was this adult world that my parents were old enough to be a part of, and they were watching the show. And I know now that other than the fact that they all looked cool, Gilda radiated some sort of joy, and I wanted to be her friend. You know,
yes.
I felt this like gravitational pull to her smile and to the joy that she was having. And I later recognized this feeling for myself that when I feel that way, when I want to play with someone, that means that I'm going to enjoy it. That means that I obviously like it. You know, when you really feel like you're pulled in, like, oh, I want to go play with that person, you know that you're going to love it.
I never got to meet Gilda Radner, but
me neither.
I just know that she would have been a delightful person. And I know so many people who've said, oh, no, she was absolutely delightful and you would have had a really good time with her. And yeah. I think what you hit on is this thing that makes me think about music and comedy and how it's all about playing.
Oof. This is one of my favorite things to talk about. You know that?
I didn't know that.
You're going to know that in a minute. I interrupted you.
I think I intuitively brought you to, I mean, this is just what I do. It's like I have a divining rod. But I was going to say, you say it. It's, you can enjoy yourself and tap into this frequency and it's fun. And afterwards people are like, that was great. Good job. And you think job.
Yeah. I would have done that for free. And I've been doing it for free for the last 48 years, really, or at least the first 20 something years in my house and for my parents and their friends in my living room. It's the thing that you do and it feels right and it feels good. The thing you were bringing up about music also just fascinates me because I'm fascinated by the music comedy connection, especially. And I know you understand that being a musical person yourself. So it's like this strange place where it's like me. I'm fascinated by the place where there's a mutual admiration society between musicians and comedians, and also how they're very exclusively their own things and great musicians can't really be fabricated. You either just are a great musician or you're not. There's really no in between. And the same, I think, with a great comedian. That's why I love hearing, you know, bands talk about like quote Spinal Tap or quote, you know, their favorite funny things. Cause I know that they understand how funny it is. And for some reason they both operate on the same frequency.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you, as someone who's very, you know, incredibly adept at both, maybe you can answer this. There's this weird thing where rock gods envy comedians.
Yes.
And comedians, every comedian I know wants to be a rock god because it just seems objectively cooler to be them.
It does, doesn't it? It's definitely cooler, hands down, from a comedian's point of view, to be the rock god, 150%. But I don't know. Talk to them about it and you might be surprised. They still know they're cooler.
No. I will tell you a quick story. This happened in like the 90s. I went out and I used to do my own warm up on the show and I would actually sing a song and I'm walking up the aisle and I stop and Jeff Beck is sitting in the audience. Probably next, maybe many people put him on par with Eric Clapton as one of the great guitarists of all time and just this iconic, amazing, incredible musician. And he's still making great music. And he is, you know, in that pantheon of 60s and 70s rock gods. And he's sitting in the aisle and I go up the aisle and I see him and I think, shit, it's Jeff Beck. I can't believe what's he doing here. And so I recover. I don't call him out. I get through the warm up. I do the show. The show's over. It was like I think it was an okay show. Nothing to write home about. He's outside the studio 6A afterwards. And he's like, I'm like, oh, you know, wow, Jeff, it's Mr. Beck. It's so cool to have you here. And he went, oh, if I could do what you do, I would finally be happy. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, and he was just like, just to be is, you know, kind of to, and I was like thinking, what do you mean to do what I do? Have light chat with someone from Dawson's Creek? What the fuck are you talking about?
By the way, yes, that's specifically what he was talking about.
He was like, the way you handled Vanderbeek was masterful. You, and I just couldn't understand what he was talking about. And then when you threw this commercial, and then there was a commercial, Dad, I don't know how you do it.
Was he dying when he was talking to you?
Yes, he was. It was weird. Very few people know this, but he had a terrible disease at the time, and he was literally running out of air as I spoke to him, which is, so my, you know, it sounds like you're putting down my impression, but it's actually very, very accurate.
I bet it's accurate. No, I think that in hearing that, it really makes me believe in my own personal theory that might be complete bullshit, which is that there is something, I don't know if musical is the right word for it, but what he was watching you do is something that is really only attainable by the comedian.
Yes. Yeah.
And we feel the same way about that unbelievable ability when we see a fantastic musician. People, yes. Like I said, people can play music, but we're talking about fantastic musicians. And there is something about timing that is not... that's my Instacart delivery, guys.
Mm-hmm. Who's here? Yeah, I had that sent over. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. Thank you for 16 fryer chickens.
I know what to get people. I know what people
like. I mean,
that's
all I live on. You know, there's something about that that is just, that's not, that the, that it, that isn't fake. And I think that's really exciting to, what is it? She's going to get him, and then she's going to attack him.
Okay, I'm just going to describe to people because they can't see it. You're holding up a beautiful small dog.
Sorry,
okay, now it's clear it's a dog. I like how your dog, what's your dog's name?
Daisy.
I like that Daisy said, I'm going to help Conan out by proving that I'm a dog in this audio format by going woof.
I squeezed her. I squoze the life out of her so that she would let you know. I was showing everybody before, but she likes to sit in this like weird nook where like she can't, she gets squished on purpose.
Yeah.
It must be like a womb thing for dogs.
Yes, some people want to be crushed. It's one of my erotic fantasies is to be crushed. Well, excuse me. I thought it says here on the paper, talk to Maya about your erotic fantasies. Well, I heard that this is something you were into. I'm to be crushed and constrained.
That is what I wanted to talk to you about today.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, we could get into all the amazing work you've done and all the things that are happening for you and talk about comedy, but...
No, I'm a fledgling therapist as well.
Okay.
I mean, I've got to find something to do these days.
Well, good. Then you can help me. Yeah, I really want to be... I think of tight belts around you, and they're tightened, and the woman is saying, you be good, and it's
and
very complicated.
A snake comes out of her mouth?
Yes, it does. How did you know that?
I'm a fledgling therapist. I know.
Oh, well, God, you're good. Yes.
Pretty good. I'm pretty good.
And then the snake says, accept your real sexuality. And I'm like, hey, whoa. Okay, that was too much. Probably too much. You know, I did want to bring up, I know that you are a huge admirer of Prince and his music and that you had this incredible band, Princess. Do you still do Princess occasionally? Do you guys reform? Do you still perform?
We do. I mean, I didn't know if we were doing it when he was alive because my friend Gretchen and I were just doing it anyway. It was like one of those things like, I'm going to be doing this in my car anyway, or like doing this in the shower. We might as well do this publicly. Not together. We weren't in the shower together, but I mean, we could. Yep. We were college buddies, but
it's another of my fantasies. Go ahead.
Yep. But then we realized that the Prince that we loved was the Prince that we grew up with, which was this early, gritty, up into Purple Rain and a little bit beyond that, this kind of like fun. And he was really, back to what we were talking about before, I realized as an adult, really funny. His stage performances had such great stuff too. One of my all-time favorite performers that I will have ever seen. I don't know if you ever got to see him live, but it was so exhilarating because he could do anything. And then he was also really funny too. And there was something about that combination. So that's why we started doing it, and we were kind of laughing through it and all that wonderful energy combined. We were doing that in the shows, and then he died. And I thought, well, this sucks. I don't want to do this anymore. But after a while, it started to feel nice to celebrate him. And then we weirdly like found all these other, you know, you find more of your people. And like, we found all these other kind of freaks who felt the same exact way, in that like they got all the jokes. They knew how funny he was. They knew all the live stuff and they loved the bootlegs. We all knew the same bootlegs and the same long versions of things. And he just happened to be such a prolific musician that there was just so much, there's so much stuff to cover that we always do new stuff every time. So we've been doing it for a while. I think we were talking about doing something again before the election to get people to vote, but I don't think we'll be doing it just yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think COVID will not allow that. But did you get, I'm imagine you got to meet Prince?
I did get to meet him. I realized the other day that I didn't know him intimately. Like, he wasn't like a true friend, but he knew I loved him, which made me feel really proud. And then I got to hug him 3 times in my life. You were there the one of those nights. You were there for the one of the hugs, which was the SNL.
Yeah, I saw him several times. He was at SNL when I was there. I don't remember what year that was. And I thought, that is the most perfect looking human I've ever seen. And people have asked me, and I said, and I don't mean it to be, it's not about his size. It's not like a size joke that he was small. He was like a doll, a very perfectly made doll. And I'm talking about his face and his features. And he looked like he had been crafted by a beautiful, you know, someone who really knew workmanship.
And then buffed him to a high gloss. I totally agree.
and I had a funny thing with him, which is I was hosting something, I think it was for Tiger Woods, some charity event, and they had this amazing lineup, and they asked me to sort of MC or do stuff. And I can't remember, but I remembered it was, I was at this venue, and an insane lineup. The person closing the show was going to be Stevie Wonder. And so I'm backstage, and there was this rumor that maybe Prince might show up and play with Stevie Wonder.
Always a rumor, by the way. Never confirmed.
Yeah. It was like, but I remembered, I heard it. All of us backstage were talking about it. I think people in the audience thought it might happen. Exactly. It was this rumor. So I'm backstage, and Stevie Wonder is on stage, and he's playing, and I'm suddenly aware, the way you're aware, like in the sixth sense of a presence, like I could see suddenly my breath, you know, and I turn to the left and Prince is there backstage and he's air drumming along it to this music. And it's the best air drumming I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's better than what the real drummer is doing with Stevie Wonder. What Prince is doing is better. It's fantastic. And so he saw me and he went, "Hey." And I said, "Hey, how are you?" He's like, "Good. Good." And he's still air drumming, not missing a beat. And then he said, I said, "So there's a rumor that you're going to go out and play with Stevie Wonder." And he went, "No, not going to do that. No, just here to watch." And I went, "Oh, so you're not going to play?" And he went, no, not going to play. And I went, "Okay." And just then Stevie Wonder starts to play Superstition. Da-dung, ding, 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 ding. And I'm thinking, okay. And I said, because people were saying you were going to go out. And he looked at me and went, "No, man, I'm really not going out." And as he said, "I'm not going out," this technician put that perfect Paisley guitar around his neck, and it was all mic'd up. And he looked at me and went, "Gotta go." And then he fell in with bonk 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 dunk 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 and walked out on stage. And I'm like, "That fucker! What?" And part of me thought he just, "Hey, man, it's supposed to be a secret. I'm backstage. You're going out in 8 seconds. You can tell me, yeah, I'm going out." But this was him saying, in his own way, mystical way, "I can't ruin the surprise."
Mm-mm.
And I thought, that's perfect.
God damn it. That's so frustrating and so accurate.
But it was perfect. That's who he was. That's who he was.
And I think that thing that he did, he created this mystique and this thing that he couldn't put down anymore. I think he had to have that game. There was never an answer. There was never a yes, he's coming, no, he's not coming. You might see him, you might, and the titter of everyone talk. That is the best. That might be the best story about his mystique that I've ever heard.
Yeah, no, it's an absolutely true story. And I've since heard Largo. I'm sure you've performed at Largo Theater. We're doing our late night shows at Largo Theater now in Los Angeles.
That's right. I'm so happy about that.
But Flanny, who runs Largo, told me, "Oh, he used to always when someone he liked was coming on, he'd call ahead and he'd make all these like, if I could sit in the back and can I have this to drink and can I have this ready? Can I have that ready?
With
and
a straw.
Then never come. And somewhere he was giggling.
God, it's like, when were we going to get the memo that you know, you could be cool too if you fucked with people like that? We just don't put in the energy and the time to be that cool.
You know what? I think it's different than that. I think you could do it. I could put in all the energy and all the time and people would just say, what an asshole.
Yeah, no.
And he said, make sure there's chicken McNuggets there and make sure it's with the sweet and sour sauce and make sure that, you know, you have my favorite pillow. And then I didn't show up. Hey, guess what? Asshole, you owe us for the chicken McNuggets. I want to bring this idea of music and comedy together because I do think one of your, or maybe some source of your superpower is that you are a very talented musician and an incredibly talented comedian and actor. And I see it all coming together, I mean, in so many places, but specifically, and this is one of the roles that you've been nominated for, Connie the Hormone Monstress. Mm. The voicing. Now, it's genius voicing. I remember when your character first showed up on Big Mouth, it's this great scene where you show up and you just, it's so hard to hit a home run with just your voice, but you come out and I don't know where that voice comes from. I have no idea where that voice comes from, but it is one of the greatest vocal performances I've seen in animation. And I've been around animation a bit. I was blown away by that performance.
Thanks,
and still
buddy.
Am.
We started doing Big Mouth and I was hired to be Nick's mom. Fred Armisen and I were hired as his parents.
Right.
And I think it was like the second or third episode. Nick Kroll already was doing a hormone monster. And so Jessie's character needed a hormone monstress and she was getting her period and it was all kind of a perfect storm. And they threw it to me. I think the idea was to do a one-off thing. I don't know where the hell that voice came from.
But you know, the reason I go back to the music thing is that no one without innate musical talent could play that character because there's something, and I'm not going to try and do it because I can't
I kind of wish you would, like a little bit.
There's a power you're talking about, and you're talking about, this is bad. This is, now I'm going to be Nixon. Any voice I do always goes back to Nixon. Now that the girl's having her period, I will resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Exactly like her.
Yeah, there's such a syrupy, sensual. Sometimes I'll see something in print that reminds me I'm not insane, but I got obsessed with the way your character said this certain word, and then I saw online that people were talking about
bubble bath.
Bubble bath.
Yeah.
But you take there's only two B's in there. And it's, but you make such a meal out of it.
Such a meal. Give Rudolph an inch. And she'll sure make a meal out of that. It's so true. I remember doing it and I remember sort of being egged on to like, can you find more? Can you actually find more? And we were trying to make, I think maybe initially because she's meant to be a hormone monstress, we were trying to make her voice a roller coaster, just like a roller coaster of emotion. So it was sort of that low, high, low dipping stuff. And then I don't know where bubble bath.
I have never, I have never, ever, 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 ever asked a celebrity to do my outgoing message. But I swear to God, there's a good chance I'll call you and ask you.
I'm into that.
Because I don't even want it to say, hey, it's Conan. I'm not here right now. I just want people who don't get me to hear you say,
it should slowly bubble out from the back of your throat.
Yeah, it should take a long time.
It's revving up. By the way, I would be happy to do that for you.
Okay, and then I know I'm going to get charged.
Well, it's a nominal fee.
$8,000. Anytime I've asked you,
$8,000 and a little bit of stock in the My Pillow. I just want to see that guy get more money.
We'll take care of him. We'll take very, very good care of him. No, I don't think Emmy nominations are always proof of anything. I think sometimes people get an Emmy nomination. You're like, wait, what?
I know.
Pol Pot got an Emmy nomination for his, in the 70s for his crimes. But my point
really?
Is.
Really?
Yeah, and he won. He beat Bob Newhart.
You know what? It's typical. Yeah. They didn't.
Stalin got one. Stalin.
That doesn't surprise me.
He won 6 Emmys.
I mean, listen. I don't currently own an Emmy, and I'm not going to lie that it would be great to have one. To make Martin Short feel shorter, but
I'd be so happy if you beat Martin Short. I love him, and he's a friend, but he's got to go. He's got to go, man. Yeah, it's too much time.
I was at his house not too long after the fires, and I walk in, and he says something's happened, and he takes me into his office. You know, he's got all his pictures, and he says my Emmy's gone, and he's. Really being matter of fact about how his Emmy's missing, and we had the fires, and he had to evacuate. Everyone in the area had to evacuate, and he's talking about this stuff. And then Henry and his son Henry and his daughter-in-law came home, and he was telling them, "I don't believe this. Something happened." And he said, "Dad, it's in the back of my car." So basically, what he had Henry do is pack everything important up. So he told Henry to pack up his Emmy just in case the house burned down.
And guess what? I'll tell you a true story about Martin Short. He has 2 dogs, and he left the dogs. That's a true story.
I believe that.
And took the Emmy, and took food for the Emmy.
Yeah.
And left the dogs.
The Emmy actually has like a little a carrying case that he straps. He straps on the front of him like a newborn.
He has a baby Bjorn, and it holds. And what the thing is, the Emmy Marty Short told me this. The Emmy loves to hear your heartbeat because it knows. And so he had the Emmy, and he's got all these lacerations from the sharp wings. But
God.
You know, is this true? I always heard that Tina Fey saw you at the Groundlings, and she was really blown away, as anyone would be, by you. But she was really impressed. I think the story was that you had maybe your improv partner was not helping you out too much.
Correct.
And she saw how you handled it, which I can imagine you doing so well. But being improv is such a... You are so dependent on
the other person.
On the other person. Can you elaborate anything on that story? I don't want to give away any names or, you know.
Well... My improv partner Conan O'Brien and I were
okay. Listen, listen.
No, the truth is that I knew right away that she was an ally.
A bad night.
You know, it was one of those things where you're at the theater and you hear like some hot shots from Saturday Night Live are going to be. They always say like producers from the show are going to be in the audience, so everyone's nervous. But the truth is that later on when she did tell me, I saw that guy was fucking with you and I saw how you handled it. Because the truth is he wasn't being a bad improviser. He was so skilled that he was fucking with me.
Oh.
And she knew that and she could tell that. And it really pleased me that she recognized that what someone who probably isn't an improviser would have noticed, that he was trying to fuck me up and make me stumble. And, because there were these people in the audience, it was that kind of a thing. And I was really grateful that it was someone that speaks that language and that understood, and she knew. So we've tried to kill him, but we haven't had any success.
No, it's very, I mean, I think Bob Odenkirk has since apologized. I'm very grateful to you, to Tina, Amy Poehler, Kristen Wiig. I mean, all these people that I have a daughter, a 16-year-old daughter, and all of you and you, you know, so well. You've been relentlessly funny and inventive and talented. And then, and I want to make sure I say this the right way, like, people's gender to me is almost like it's the afterthought. You're just such funny people. Correct. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I love that we're getting to a place where it used to be Lucille Ball is a funny woman. And yeah. then I think, I hope this is true, that we're getting to a place where it's just there's so many goddamn really funny, brilliant women who are, I don't know, gender. I mean, it's part of it, but it's not part of it in a beautiful way. Does that make sense?
Yes, because you and I have both been through this so many times. We've heard this question before. We were brought up in an environment where it's a woman in comedy is the phrase that you hear over and over again. And then when my group was at Saturday Night Live, there were so many incredible women that were there before me. And I love both the men and the women on the show. I was equally attracted. I would have had sex with all of them. They were all that funny, like whether right. they were male or female. But the thing is that the questions that my generation of women were getting was, you know, it's a real boys club at Saturday Night Live. How do you deal with that? And it was so much, it was based more on this idea that was in print and this journalistic story. Like everyone has to have a story. So they kept asking us this story that wasn't really applying to us anymore, whether we had something to do with it or whether we were the recipients of the benefits of people that came before us, whatever the hell it was, mm-hmm. it just kind of continued on till I remember all this talking about it because we had to do an article. I don't even remember. It was like Time Magazine. So it was something. It was like the perfect storm of like Tina being the first female head writer, and all. And there were like five females in the cast at once, and everyone was really strong. And that was kind of the moment where I think someone said, like, can we stop asking this question? Because mm-hmm. I was never a little girl that was hoping to be the first, you know, funny woman in my family. It was just sort of like being funny was cool. My brother was funny growing up. My brother and I used to watch The Gong Show and mm-hmm. make me laugh. And my dad showed us Mel Brooks movies, and comedy was cool to me. I wasn't watching it so that I could be a cool lady. Like it's like you said, it was, you know, my gender was first of all predisposed. I had no choice, but like it wasn't part of the thought process or conversation. Right. And it never is really. So, you know, it's sort of like, it's like anything. It's like when you put yourself out into the world, people have to create a name for it and a category, or it's, yeah. and it's like, wow, you're so funny. This is the first time we've ever seen you serious. What's that like? And you're like, I'm still the same fucking idiot who's eating the same yogurt every morning. I haven't changed. But people need to define you somehow. And yes. it's sort of like yes. how you are digested in the world. It is true that I think we certainly are getting better, but I don't know that that is ever going to change because people love to label. It's kind of lame.
Well, I've, you know, noticed that it's the need. And I think it's a very human need. It's not just the media. I'm not going to blame the media. I think it's a very human need that there's a lot going on out there and we want to make it make sense. Yeah. So, and you're a fascinating person to talk to about this because you are such a great shapeshifter and you just keep changing. And so I think you could put out an album, you could have an incredible crush in a dramatic role, you can be like steal a show with a voice and a cartoon, you could do a puppet show. I just don't know what you could come up with next.
Thanks, but Conan. That's so
but
nice.
I think that there's always going to be a desire to say she was the funny lady on SNL.
Yeah.
Or but like then or, suddenly, you know,
that's always happened to me. We're like, there hasn't been an African-American woman on the show since Maya Rudolph. I was like, oh, it's good to know I was African-American when I worked there. I didn't, you know, that's the new, it's always something.
I used to shout that whenever you would come on camera. Here comes the African-American. Yeah. And then people told me that's not cool. You know.
I went into Lorne's office and I was like, am I the black girl on the show? And he's like, I always think of you as the Jewish girl. I was like, all right. I'm never gonna, just like Prince. Yeah. I'm never going to get a straight answer out of beloved Lorne either. But the truth is that shape-shifting thing that you're talking about is actually like a very clear indication of like how I like to put myself out in the world and how I feel about being in the world. Like I don't yeah. really want to feel like one thing. And I totally get it when you say that not just, it's not just a journalistic story, but people need to feel like they know what they're consuming or digesting. And it is really interesting. You know, I think just naturally, I really gravitate towards whatever rises to the top. If it's fantastic, it's fantastic. I mean, I don't really want to know about the other stuff. And if it's like fair to Midland, sorry, I'm not that interested. So it's the quality that I desire. And it, I think it's probably the quality of the work that I'm looking forward to doing in what I'm doing, which is probably why, I don't know, I think maybe with, like with Connie, with the Big Mouth stuff, I think it's like the one of the most successful things I've ever done. But I think it's probably because I'm laughing so hard when I'm doing it. It's like, they give me the fucking funniest stuff to say. I say butthole on a regular basis, which is my all time favorite word. Like I say the nastiest, dumbest stuff. And it's so fun. And I find myself joyful and giddy when I leave because I'm happy. And like that stuff is, it's back to the whole Gilda theory. It's like that joy, you know, when you're in the room with someone that makes you laugh, when you're at work and you're happy and you're genuinely making yourself laugh, it's just better work. It comes out better and people, and somehow that transfers and people, it resonates.
I said this many times, but there's so many moments, some of my happiest moments in my comedy career are not recorded. I mean, I'm just picturing you and Mulaney and Kroll in between takes,
fucking
around. And I think that would be like, oh, okay, that would, you're being just as funny when it's not being recorded as you are when it's being recorded.
The one person that I probably regularly have recorded with more than anyone is Nick for that show. And I think he might be one of the funniest fucking people of all time.
He's all right, let's not do that. I mean, okay.
He's not Irish. which is a real ding against him. So he's got that going against him. Well, now I've got two dogs. But two dogs.
I just had a dog sent over to you. Did you get it?
I just got him. Look, he's right there.
Yep, that's the one I picked out.
You got it. Yeah. Much bigger than the other one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
His name's Reinhardt.
Reinhardt. Thanks, Reinhardt.
Yeah, I had that sent. I always, if I really like a guest, I give a signal at one point, send a dog over to that guest. Yeah, so that's for you.
This monster is a puppy, if you can believe
that. Oh, that's a puppy? We're on a Zoom call, for anyone who doesn't know, during this COVID era, that's how we do it. And you are being very generous in showing, you keep swinging the camera around to show us all kinds of things. I now know where you live. I can judge by the pin oak. It's outside.
It's not as glamorous as you thought, is it? I live in a one-bedroom condo.
Yeah, it's depressing. Yeah, it's really depressing. And there's an old poster of the Fonz on the wall and just some scattered, man.
He was one of my first loves, and I used to play Demolition Derby when I was a kid and wrap my arm in a paper towel hoping that I was like Pinky.
Yeah, Pinky Tuscadero.
And I would fantasize that I got to marry the Fonz.
That's so cool. You know who, this is such a creepy thing, but one of my first TV crush, and it's so creepy to admit to, is I was so young and it was showing in reruns, but Sally Field's first, like one of her big roles in TV was The Flying Nun. She was a nun that flew. I had a crush on a nun.
Yeah, you did.
That's wrong. I was a crush on a nun.
But your senses were right. You knew that there was something else underneath that habit.
But it's wrong. I don't think I've ever admitted that until, I don't think I've ever said that out loud till today. I guess you are a therapist. My crush was on a nun. I do not want to keep you any longer because you have been incredibly generous with your time.
Well, my fee is a lot more expensive in the second hour.
We're flipping over. Such a delight to talk to you.
And I'm really into all the stuff we talked about. I could talk about the stuff with you for a long time. It's
okay. Well, then let's continue for another hour. I see a publicist in the background throwing things. I'm very good friends with Martin Short, but I'm rooting for you. Screw Marty Short.
He can suck it. He's got plenty.
Yes. He's got enough. Enough he's with the Martin enough. Short. He's got two Latin Grammys. The guy has enough, you know? So I am really, and it's silly because I want you to win everything. But your talent and your grace is completely undisputed. So you do not need an Emmy, but you do need more dogs in your house.
I have one more. He's a lot older. He knows his place. I'm so honored to hear that from you. I've loved you for so long, as you know. And then I'm really, it means a lot coming from you saying all that stuff. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, best of luck to you and my best to your very talented other half.
My dog, Daisy.
Your dog, Daisy. Great director, by the way.
By the way, look at her face. She looks angry.
She does.
Indifferent, angry, and
you know what? Not a Conan fan.
She's not a Conan fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. I will definitely give Paul your love. And
I made my son watch There Will Be Blood with me last night because
really?
I've watched it over 50 times. And the times I've been around your husband, I've restrained myself. I have not asked him questions that I've wanted to ask him about his movies. He's one of my favorite filmmakers of all time. Yeah.
You should. I think he would. I think he would like it.
He is an undisputed master, and he really makes movies just for me, I think. So I just watched it, I think, for the 55th time last night and had my son watch it with me, and he loved it, too. So.
That's so cool.
But enough about him. Screw him. Well, yeah. You know, who
but he does,
about?
By the way, he does make them for you.
I know. That's what I know. And you know what? You can tell because at the top it always says for Conan. Mm-hmm. There's always just a little. Maya, congratulations on all the amazing stuff that's deservedly happening for you. And I can't wait to see you in a non-COVID world where we can hang. That'd be
same.
Nice.
I would really like that. You make me very happy. Thank you.
All right, this was really fun.
You bye-bye. Too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bubble bio.
Bye, bubble bro.
Bubble bio.
Let's check in with some more voicemails from listeners. Does that sound good?
Yes, yes. I love to hear what the listeners think. I like to try and please them. So let's do as you suggested.
Hi, Conan. This is Anna. I wanted to let you know how much you have affected my family. Not in a bad way. My dad always wanted 4 kids, and my mom said, that's not happening. So when my sister was born, she would get up in the middle of the night and nurse my sister. And in order to keep my dad awake, she would always turn on Conan O'Brien. And so to this day, my dad always says, you know, the reason you don't have any more brothers or sisters is Conan O'Brien. And I want to let you know that you're curbing the population with your show. And now my sister's an adult and I'm an adult. And actually, I have my own daughter and we watch Conan O'Brien and listen to him, you, all the time. Aww. So thank you for keeping our numbers low. Have a great day. Bye.
To keeping our numbers low.
Yeah, yeah. I am a spermicidal gel. We're finding out that it is so funny because I completely, that resonates with me because especially all those years, 16 years of doing late night at 12:30, people would always come up to me who were new moms and they would say, I never was up that late. And this is long before, you know, internet and ways of recording things. So people would always say, I love your show and then tell me why they were up at 12:35. Which was really funny. It was like, oh, I've really grown to love the show. You see, I have a very bad rash and there's a cream I need to put on every 6 hours. Now I put it on before I go to sleep, but that means I have to get up again at 12:30 and reapply the cream for my burn. So it was just always this hilarious, really like the show and my teeth need to be taken out at 12:35 and put in a solution of formaldehyde for 10 minutes and then replaced in my jaw. And during that time, while I'm waiting, I watch your show. But I was specifically here from moms. And they always looked really tired, and they were always pushing a stroller with a newborn baby. And they were like, yeah, the show has had a good theme this week. It's had a good feel. Oh, no. And you could tell they were up watching me under duress. So I believe that. What's the logic? Help me through the logic of how I kept the numbers low. Because they were up feeding the child.
Here's what I think he wanted. They wanted four, or somebody wanted four kids. Then they would watch you, and maybe you took them out of the mood to do it. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. So is that what she's saying? Is she saying that?
Or is it not that she knows you were from a big family and they don't want that to
happen? Yeah, it could be that too.
I don't think that was implied. I think what she's saying, and this is my read on it. Mm-hmm. That no man can perform while hearing my voice.
Okay.
Mm. It's why I can't speak when I'm having sex.
What? Wait, what?
Because I wither my own erection with my voice. I think that's what she's saying. That's just true. And I've been
wither.
I do. It withers. It's like it's like a chili pepper that withered on the vine. It withers instantly. Like, you know, the time lapse of something rotting, where it shows something rotting in time lapse. You know, when it goes from healthy to then just withering really quickly, and then there are flies all over it, and then it's gone. That's what happens to a male penis when it hears my voice.
Yeah, so I haven't had sex since I took this drug.
I'll tell you, it's one of the reasons why, if you look at countries where this podcast is very popular, those populations are dropping rapidly. They're seeing a rap. That's why we are there. They won't allow us to be shown in Italy, because Italy has a terrible population problem. They really need the population to grow in Italy, and the Italian people are disappearing. They found out that we were doubling, tripling the, we were cutting it by a third.
Oh, okay.
We were cutting.
I bet every time you do a Conan Without Borders, you can just measure that data. There's a steep drop right there.
Yeah, we went to Mexico. Yeah. No births since I went to Mexico.
Oh, no.
Korea, no births since I went to Korea. Well, actually, one birth, but the child is strange.
You were born, and then your parents had three more kids, though.
Yeah, but I was kept in a different room. I was kept far away. I was kept up in the attic of our house.
They isolated you?
Yeah, they isolated me so that they could have more children. And that was something that people realized right away, that my voice, even as a child, wah, wah, it was a high reedy, wah, 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 wah. And so they realized, if we're going to have a large family, which is our dream, we need to isolate this child.
Oh,
so they isolated me. But yeah, I'm a walking spermicidal gel. I am a deboner, I suppose you would say.
I have called you a boner killer.
Yes, you have.
In past podcasts, I think. Boner killer.
Yeah.
That would be your superpower. I don't think anybody,
no one could, we're the opposite of what you would put on. Mm-hmm. This show is the opposite of what you would put on this podcast to set the mood.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, people classically say, oh, you got to put on this music. Mm-hmm. This is what you got to have. You got to light these candles.
Like very white.
Yeah.
Candles.
Yeah. And you want to get the mood just right. And I think.
We're the Barry Manilow of podcasts.
No, I don't think that's fair.
To Barry Manilow or us?
Barry Manilow. I think that's unfair to him. I mean, Lola, she was a dancer.
She was a showgirl.
She was a showgirl?
Yeah.
Oh. Is that what she did?
Yeah. Lola, she was a showgirl.
And she did something.
Oh, wait. Am I right? No.
Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl.
That's a showgirl.
Yeah. And then she did some really cool stuff. And she has a... Anyway, don't sing it, because we can't afford to pay the rights.
Okay.
But us singing Barry Manilow is a boner killer.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Listen, I reject this whole... I'm saying very clearly that my reedy, needy voice would drain any penis of its life-giving blood.
So even if you were like reading an exotic novel, not exotic, erotic novel.
Yeah, I've tried that.
Oh, okay.
When I read 50 Shades of Grey out loud, and talk about, you know, the various plugs that were put in the butt and stuff like that.
Come on.
Yeah. It just becomes the least erotic experience anybody's ever had.
Well, the way you just said it now.
You just sterilized me by saying that right now.
I can, I can.
Oh my God. I would like to have a child one day. Please.
You know, it'd be great. It would be great if I read some erotic fiction and we tested this out. It'd be great. If I just read a page of like the most erotic page of 50 Shades of Grey, and you would see how no one out there gets aroused. Absolutely no one.
I mean, I could pull it up.
Tune in next episode. Let's do a two-parter.
I mean, but I could try to pull it up.
It's on your fucking screensaver.
Okay.
You know?
I have watched all three of the movies.
She loves the movies. I don't understand the thing about 50 Shades of Grey, which is they get married. I'm sorry, no. And then it's still like this forbidden. Now it's time for you to put on the leather chaps and descend into the pit. And I'm going to take this rubber pickle and I'm going to like, no,
rubber
married
pickle.
People don't do that. Married people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? We've got to go. We got to get going.
Rubber pickle.
We said we were going to rent, you know, we got to get over to the Schlesingers. We got to get going. We're supposed to be there in half an hour. Stop dragging your ass. No, but first you're going to take off. I'm going to tie you up. And now you're not going to fucking tie me up. We've got to go. And then we've got to get you at the PTA thing. We've got to be there. We said we'd be there. Yeah, you're going to hear more about this next episode when I will read some classic erotic fiction. And you will see how my voice completely drains all sexual tension out of even the most erotic prose.
Oh, God. Well, oil up and stay tuned, everyone.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sonam Obsessian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.